Welcome back to the deep dive. It's January 2026, and I have to be honest with you, right out of the gate, if I see one more headline about how AI is going to change everything, I might actually scream.
I think we're all right there with you. The future tense has been doing a lot of heavy lifting for the last few years. We've been living on promises.
Exactly. We have future fatigue. So for today's deep dive, I'm setting a rule. We are strictly banning the future tense. We're not talking about 2030. We're looking at what's happening right now, this month, inside companies like Amazon, Toyota, and P&G.
And we have quite the stack of sources to do it.
Oh, we do. The main one is the orgchange.ai dispatch from January 2026, but we're pulling in data from the 2026 Global AI Report by NTT Data, and some really honest field notes from Deloitte EY and Harvard Business Review.
And if I had to boil this entire stack down to one single headline, it would be this. The party's over. The workday has begun.
I like that.
We've moved from AI as this, like, novelty tool, a magic trick, to AI as a staffed capability.
Staffed capability. That sounds very official. But what really jumped out at me is the metaphor everyone seems to be using now. We're not really calling it software anymore, are we? We're calling it the junior employee.
That is the core shift. It reflects that jump from, you know, generative AI, writing emails, making funny pictures, to what we're now calling agentic AI.
So they don't just create, they do things.
They execute workflows. And the insight from people like Michael Collins at Alumni Ventures or Emily Nhangian at Palantir is just crucial here. You don't hand a new junior employee the keys to the kingdom on day one.
Right. And this is where it gets really interesting for anyone listening who manages a team. The advice isn't install and walk away. It's treat the AI like you would a bright, eager, but slightly clueless intern.
Precisely. Think about it. How do you manage an intern? You don't just say, go run the company. You give them supervision. You set up guardrails. You give them very clear, very narrow goals, and you expect them to mess up.
This is my favorite part of the research. Sean Dunair from Lowe's, he talks about this 60% rule. They're setting the expectation that their AI agents will start at about 60% accuracy.
Which is fascinating, isn't it? Because in traditional software, if something is 60% accurate, we call it broken.
Totally. I mean, if my calculator was only right 60% of the time, I'd throw it out. I wouldn't say, good effort, keep trying.
But if a new intern is right 60% of the time in their first week, you say, okay, decent start, you missed these details, let's correct them, explain why they're wrong, and try again.
So it reframes the whole hallucination problem. It's not a bug, it's a teachable moment.
It becomes a training process. You're basically building a relationship with the tech.
I like that. It makes it feel more manageable. But okay, training an intern is a nice metaphor. What does that actually look like at a global scale? Let's get into the field notes.
Let's start with Amazon. They've got a system called DeepFleet.
DeepFleet? Sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
It's not far off. It's their hybrid workforce. So, you know, we usually picture Amazon with either robots running around a warehouse or humans telling them where to go. DeepFleet is neither. It's an AI orchestration layer. It's the traffic controller.
So the AI is the middle manager.
In a way, yes. It's coordinating the flow between huge robot fleets and human workers in real time. The AI is handling all the handoffs. The humans and robots are like an orchestra, and the agent is the conductor.
Okay, that's a huge shift. But let's talk Toyota. This one stuck with me because I think anyone who's ever worked in a big, older company will feel this pain.
The green screens.
The green screens. The report says they had a workflow for supply chain visibility that required navigating, and I'm quoting, dozens of mainframe screens. I can just picture someone tabbing through lines of green text.
And that's pure friction. It's low-value work. We call it data hunting. So they brought in a supply chain visibility agent. Now, instead of hunting, you just ask the agent, and it gives you real-time ETAs.
But here's the important part. It didn't just make it faster. The report says it shifted the staff from data hunting to exception management. Can you unpack that? It sounds like corporate speak, but it feels important.
It's a critical difference. Data hunting is just finding out what's going on. Where's the truck? It adds zero value. Exception management is high value work. The agent already told you there's a delay. Now your brain power goes to fixing it. You reroute the shipment. The AI does the grunt work. The human does the problem solving.
It's moving people up the value chain. Okay, speaking of that, let's talk about Procter & Gamble. Because they're using this for pure innovation.
Yeah, this is one of the more radical examples. P&G is using GPT-4 via Azure as what they call a cybernetic teammate.
A cybernetic teammate. I love these names. But what does that actually mean?
Well, think about a normal product meeting. Marketing has a concept. R&D says it's impossible. Packaging says it won't fit in the box. It's slow. It's a waterfall.
And the idea gets watered down at every step.
Exactly. P&G found that with this AI teammate, they can iterate on everything at once. The AI can instantly simulate, okay, if we change the formula this way, the packaging has to change that way, and the marketing claim needs to shift to this.
That's the part that blew my mind. It didn't just shorten the meeting. It changed the meeting cadence. It actually changed the team structure.
That's the big takeaway here. The tech didn't just speed up a task. It reshaped the org. It broke down the silos between departments.
And then you've got JotForm, which feels a bit more down to earth. They're using agents for customer service.
Right, but the twist is what the humans do. The AI handles the routine stuff, reset my password, where's my refund, but the humans aren't gone. Their job is now supervisor trainer.
So they review the AI's conversations.
They review the conversations, spot patterns, and basically grade the AI's homework. The entry-level human job has shifted from doing the work to managing the thing that does the work.
Okay, so we've got these amazing examples. It all sounds great. But let's be real. If it was this easy, everyone would be doing it. Most companies are stuck. Why? What's the hurdle?
It's the unsexy stuff. It's the plumbing. You know, you can't have a brilliant AI intern if your filing cabinet is on fire.
The garbage in, garbage out problem.
It's even deeper than that. Dag Lyden from Crisp puts it perfectly. He says, it's not enough to have your data in a warehouse. You need a semantic layer.
Okay, let's stop there. Semantic layer. I hear that term constantly, but I feel like no one ever really explains it. What is it?
Think of it like this. Your data warehouse is a library full of books. The semantic layer is the translation guide. It gives all that data context. It defines that when sales says revenue, they mean one thing, but when accounting says revenue, they mean something slightly different.
Ah, okay. So without that layer, the AI sees the numbers, but has no idea what the business logic is behind them.
Exactly. It's just guessing. And that leads to the other big hurdle, orchestration.
This connects to that great line from Kim Huffman at Workiva. She said, if you can't automate a process, you can't easily agentify it.
That's a golden rule. It's about readiness. If a human can't even draw a flowchart of the process, if it's just, oh, ask Bog, he knows how to fix it, then an agent is going to fail. It needs logic.
Which is a warning against what the report calls pilot purgatory. I feel like so many people listening are probably living there right now. A little test works for 3 weeks and then just dies.
And the way out of that is to avoid just bolting on AI to a broken process. The advice from places like Amplitude and Dell is to start small, like an IT help desk, but you have to have a plan to scale it into a full workflow redesign.
So don't just answer the ticket faster. Figure out why that ticket keeps getting created in the first place.
Precisely. The durable gains come from redesigning the whole process, not just from a chatbot.
All right, we've talked tech, we've talked plumbing. Now we have to talk about the hardest part, the people. Because if your team hates or fears the AI, none of this works.
And the data shows they're worried. We've got quotes from the voices from the front lines. Kim Billiter from EY points out that people are worried about job security, sure, but also skill erosion and, believe it or not, rising workloads.
Rising workloads. That one surprised me. I thought this was supposed to save us time.
Well, during the transition, you're doing two jobs. You're doing your normal job, and you're training the intern. You're reviewing its work, correcting it. That takes time.
That makes total sense. The report brings up these classic change management models, like Kurt Lewin's idea of unfreezing.
Right.
What's that?
The idea is that an organization is like a block of ice frozen in its habits. To change it, you first have to unfreeze it, make it liquid so you can remold it. And with AI, the heat that unfreezes the ice is trust.
Trust that it works.
Mm-hmm.
Or trust that it won't take my job.
It's both. But mostly it's trust that the organization has a plan. The 80-car model is also in here, pointing to that gap between awareness and ability.
Oh, that's so real. Mm. The tools roll out way faster than people can learn them. It was like, here's Copilot, good luck.
Exactly. And that creates anxiety. It means the manager's role is shifting. You're not just managing people. You're managing a hybrid workforce of humans and agents.
And there was a specific strategy for that, right? Workiva used AI ambassadors.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't just have a top-down mandate. That never works. You need champions inside the teams, your peers, who can show everyone, hey, look how this agent helped me finish that report in half the time.
It's that social proof that actually unfreezes things.
It's how people actually learn, not from manuals, but from each other.
So if we zoom all the way out to the boardroom, the perspective is shifting there too. This is not an IT project anymore.
It can't be. Yutaka Sasaki from NTT Data Group has this quote that I think just defines 2026. He says, AI is no longer an enabler of strategy. AI strategy is the strategy.
Wow. That's a bold statement.
It means they're fused now. You can't separate them. If your whole business plan is built on speed and your competitors using agents to move 100 times faster, your business plan is already dead.
And that means accountability lands in the boardroom, not just with the IT department.
Right. And it also means you have to deal with the risk of shadow AI.
Shadow AI sounds ominous.
It's just your employees trying to get their jobs done. If you don't give them the tools, they'll find their own. They'll upload sensitive company data into public models.
And suddenly your secret sauce is training somebody else's AI.
Exactly. So the message is, build the safe channel, or your employees will dig an unsafe one for you.
Okay, so let's recap. It's January 2026. The hype is over. The real work is here. We're treating AI not as software, but as a junior staffer that needs training and patience.
Right. And to make that staffer work, you have to do the unsexy grunt work first, build that semantic layer, clean up your processes. You can't just sprinkle AI on top of chaos.
And most of all, it's a human challenge. It's about building trust, unfreezing old habits, and getting managers ready to lead these new hybrid teams.
That's the whole mission.
So before we sign off, I want to leave you with one final thought, something that was nagging at me through all of this, especially with the junior intern idea. If the AI is the junior employee,
yeah,
and it does all the grunt work, and the humans all get promoted to supervisors who just check the work.
I think I see where you're going with this.
Where do the human junior employees learn? I mean, I learn my job by doing the grunt work, by digging through those mainframe screens, by writing the terrible first draft. If the agent does all that entry-level work now, how do we train the human experts of the future?
That's the multi-million dollar question. We might be cutting off the bottom rungs of our own ladder.
Exactly.
If we don't figure out how to train people in a world where the machines do all the initial learning tasks, we could, I don't know, run out of human supervisors in a decade. We might be creating a competency gap that we can't close later.
Something to think about as you train your new digital intern this week. Are you training your teammate or your replacement? Thanks for listening to this deep dive.
See you next time.